Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to the Driving Mall Show. Hi, I'm Paul. I'll be your host this evening. And what have we got on the menu for tonight? Well, obviously we had the Black Ferns playing at the weekend against Wallaroo. So we'll have a chat about women's international rugby. There were other games as well, which we'll cover off on. There's the Farrah Palmer Cup, as well as the NPC as well, which I was at a couple of games for the weekend. I've got some post-match interviews for you from all of that. This coming weekend, we've also got the Rugby Championship kicks back off with the international men's rugby. Obviously, there is also a bunch of news there around selections and injuries and stuff like that. So lots and lots to talk about this week. And joining me just in the nick of time is Stephen Harris. How are you doing, sir?
Very good. Thank you, Paul. Always a privilege and a pleasure to be on the TDM. And yeah, you're dead right. There is a lot to unpack, despite not a lot of international men's rugby. But boy, there's enough to get our teeth into this evening.
There is. And we're not even talking about the Heartland Championship either. So look, as you know, I've sort of have a bash at the old mainstream media and Sky from time to time. But look, it occurred to me that the Sky at the moment is covering an awful lot of rugby over in the UK, for example. I don't think they have, or do they? I mean, do they actually have access to all of the Gallagher Premiership games every week? I'm not sure they do, but that is with 13 teams there. It's only six games a weekend, whereas down here at the moment you've got all of the NPC games. So that's seven games during the weekend plus one midweek. You've also then got your six Farrah Palmer Cup games each week, and Heartland Championships, and the odd first 15 finals were on the box at the weekend, plus international action with the Black Ferns. So look, there are a lot of camera crews out there by Sky, and that investment in covering all that rugby should get a mention from time to time. I say that I'm not sure we always agree with how they cover some of the stuff and what they say or how they affect scheduling. But so you've got to take the hat off that they do cover an awful lot of rugby, Stephen.
Yeah, I read somewhere they were covering around about 19 games on the weekend. Obviously, that's your Heartland, your NPC, secondary school rugby. Boy, talk about spreading your resources around the place. I would say they were pretty well stretched. And, you know, watching a couple of the odd Farrah Palmer Cup games, you could probably see they only maybe had two or three cameras at the ground. I know one of the games I clicked into just to have a look was the game between the Taranaki Fuel and the Northern Kauri, and boy, with the weather, it was hard to make out any of the players. But at the end of the day, you know, you got to give Sky a bit of credit for getting out there, definitely spreading their resources. So there was plenty, was a plethora of rugby on the weekend to get your teeth into.
A plethora.
Plethora.
Okay, So yes, so what? Because obviously Stephen has a go at me plenty of for my pronunciations of Maori and Pacifican words. As soon as he gets an English one wrong, I'm going to jump in there and have my own go. Thank you very much. So yeah, I know I did see Sky taking some flack for not having a cameras in the corners for one of the games for TMOs. And it's a look, as you say, 19 games at the weekend. Now, some of those double headers, so they have the same camera crew can cover two or even three games there. But so even so, that look, that is a very good shift. You, sir, you had a nice family weekend, so you were catching all of your games on the box there. Me, I got out to a couple of grounds at the weekend. I was up at Navigation Home Stadium for the Waikato. For counties versus Waikato in the NPC, and then on Saturday up to North Harbour Stadium for Harbour versus Otago in the Farrell Palmer Cup and Harbour versus Tasman in the NPC. So we'll have post-match interviews from all of those games during the show. Stephen's clapping there, but come on, I had the weekend off the weekend before, which when you made games. So look, it's part of a tag team that we have here at New Zealand Sport Radio, and I really appreciate what Stephen does.
But I was going to say you actually did the long haul up and up from Waihee, mate. So that's really impressive. I'll be definitely heading up to Whangarei this Sunday to cover the Southland Northland game. Also, I think the Kauri are playing the Fuel in a quarterfinal championship match on the same day, but I stand to be corrected. I'll look at that draw and we'll let everybody know as the program rolls on.
Yeah, Northland got Taranaki in the Farrell Cup. Now, if you look on the Farrell Cup website, so whilst we've been giving a hat tip to Sky, we won't give the hat tip to New Zealand Rugby this weekend, because they haven't updated their website about when the fixtures are for this coming weekend in the Farrell Cup. And as you say, their quarterfinals. So come on, you should have that sorted out now. If you don't mind, New Zealand Rugby, let's let people know when the games are. You're currently saying it's at some time on Saturday, but as Stephen says, I would expect it to be a doubleheader with the NPC game. That would make a lot of sense on that one. Simon also makes a good point that Sky put some of the games on free to air on Prime as well, which has been fantastic over the last few weeks. So let's kick off with the women's rugby at the weekend. And I'll be honest, I didn't get to watch this game because I was driving back from Auckland, as you say, doing that long haul trip. But the Black Ferns beat the Wallaroos 52-5 in that one. A big victory for the Black Ferns. So Stephen, does this mean that the Black Ferns are back as being favourites for the Rugby World Cup, or what? So actually, no, first off, before we get into that side of things, what did you make of the game? Clearly, a one-sided affair, and I saw some people saying that the Black Ferns could have racked up 100 points.
Yeah, listen, it was a good performance. First of all, I've got to say, it looked like a nice, clear night down in Christchurch. I've got to say, I was disappointed with the crowd that turned up. They put most of the crowd into one side of the stadium, which created a lot of atmosphere. But you know, there's been a lot of talk about some of the other regions not getting games during the World Cup. Of course, all those World Cup games being held in the northern region in Auckland and also Whangarei. So I thought here was a perfect opportunity, even if you had to travel up either from Dunedin or travel down from the Tasman area. But for me, it was quite a disappointing crowd, which is a shame because they actually missed a really, really good Black Ferns performance, probably the best performance from the Black Ferns in a few seasons, Paul. They started the game very well, and we'll get into that shortly. But probably, I know Wayne Smith at the end of the game, probably not so happy. They tended to lose their shape a little bit in the second half, and I think they just let Australia back into the game, or not so much into the game that they were ever going to win it, but gave them the opportunity to move a little bit of ball at the end. And listen, credit to them picking up the last try of the game.
Yep. So yes, it was 52-0. Yes, and you say that try at the end there for the Wallabies. Look, this is the second time they've played them this year already, part of the Pacific Four Championship. Three or four series where the Black Ferns beat Australia 23-10 up in Tauranga, which is one that I went along to. So look, it's a better performance there for the Black Ferns. In fact, that's and one of the things we've seen is that there's been some. I mean, Kirsty Alley has come out talking about how wonderful the coaching setup is that they've got. And Pete, and if you're someone like Wayne Smith, you have the ability to pick up the phone and talk to certain people. And hence, Richard McCaw, Kevin Mialamu, Dan Carter have all been in camp helping out with the Black Ferns. And yeah, he's someone that that's got those people's numbers. And when he makes that call, they will answer and come and help as well, won't they?
Oh, they certainly will. You know, a couple of areas where I think Wayne Smith, Sir Graham Henry, will be really, really pleased is the set piece. The set piece scrum was very strong, in fact, dominant. Of course, line out very good. So that just gave them the opportunity to attack off both platforms. You know, something that they if you look back to the tour at the end of 2021, they were severely exposed, and there were some very, very good performances up front. None better than I thought than Nan Wu at lock, who carried strongly and just really put herself about at breakdown. Also coming back into the team, McMenamin, the number eight after a couple of seasons away from this level of rugby. And I'm also impressed with Simon, the open side flanker from Waikato, who you would have seen a bit of in the Farrah Palmer Cup. Paul, she very, very good, and just giving them a real bit of physicality in that seven jersey, and it just set up nicely for Coxedge and DeMont, who pretty much ran the ship. Letiaga out on the wing, also showing how dangerous she is, and Rennie Holmes at fullback is just such a class act. But there were times that they weren't quite accurate, and I think that's pretty much what the professor was alerting to, Paul. Just getting that that accuracy and knowing that they can basically put the foot down, or should I say put the foot on the throat of any team that they come up against it. But listen, we really won't know until they come up against England and France. That'll be definitely a different kettle of fish. But to play those sides, they will have to stick to their structure. But I was impressed with the way the forwards went about their work. And just got to say credit to the Australians as well. They actually started reasonably well. And I thought, well, here we go. We've got a contest. But Paul, if your set piece is letting you down, it's going to be a long, I was going to say day at the office, but in that case, evening at the office.
Yeah, no, very true. And look, I'm not sure the scheduling of the game to Christchurch was the best one. Let's be honest, the Crusaders don't get great crowds down there, so it doesn't surprise me that they didn't get a great crowd in Christchurch. It's not a venue that they haven't got a decent stadium at the moment, and I think fans aren't into the habit of going to the ground. I think somewhere like Tasman that put on a great that had a really good crowd and a really good setup for the All Blacks versus the Pumas the other year would have been a good venue for this kind of game, taking it to the South Island. Simon makes a point that the Women's World Cup last time was just in two venues at Belfast and Dublin. Yes, I think, that is kind of normal. They do have it in two locations that aren't too far apart. So it's not a surprise. I mean, that sometimes they have it even in one location. When they have it in France, I believe. So, look, I understand why they're keeping the logistics as low as possible, get the cost down as well by having it just in two locations, which you can both travel to. So, the women at the Rugby World Cup won't have to travel between hotels; they'll be able to be in one place, which is a good thing, which helps with their training, etc. So, I do think it is a good one. For that one. LB says, which teams are in the Women's Rugby World Cup? It's called the Rugby World Cup rather than Women's Rugby World Cup, to be fair. But Google is a fantastic answer for that kind of thing. But when you're looking at England, France, New Zealand, Canada, USA, Australia, I'm trying to do this off the top of my head, Scotland, I know Ireland aren't there. I think Scotland knocked Spain out. I think Wales are there, and I think I've not got it off the top of my head, but I do actually. Sorry, here we go. So Pool A is New Zealand, Australia, Wales, and Scotland. Pool B is Canada, USA, Italy, and Japan. And then Pool C is England, France, South Africa, and Fiji. There we go. The wonderful Tribe Sports app, folks, on your phone is a great place for this kind of information, because you saw what a mess I made of it when I chose to off the top of my head there with that one. The other game, which Simon pointed out, was that, put in a live chat, is that Japan lost to Ireland 22-57. Obviously, warm-up games for that Rugby World Cup that's coming up. It's coming weekend then. We've got the return fixture of the Wallaroos versus the Black Ferns over in Australia, 2:45 p.m. New Zealand time for that one. Japan again play a second test against Ireland. And then in the early hours of Sunday morning for us here in New Zealand, we've got Scotland versus USA and Canada versus Wales as teams ramp up for that Women's Rugby World Cup later this year. So good to see tests for those teams as well. Bit of a shame that we've got Black Ferns games going on at the same time as the Farrah Palmer Cup. But I guess, look, we've seen that happen in the men's game. And it looks like we're making the same kind of mistakes or having the same kind of issues in the women's game as well. They did kick off the Farrah Palmer Cup earlier, but as we get to finals time, losing your Black Ferns or your best players at the point you end the competition, it's kind of the wrong way round, isn't it? You really want to have your players coming in at that point, not being taken away from the competition at that point. But this is the standard messed up scheduling or world kind of not having a world schedule or world calendar. That's what I'm looking for in rugby, and we're seeing it again. Unfortunately, we don't learn our lessons. Let's run through. Move on then to the Farrah Palmer Cup games from the weekend. As I say, I was at the game on Saturday between North Harbour and Otago, and Harbour lost that one 22-38. Otago now have gone through 5 from 5, winning all their games in the championship. There will finish as top, or have finished as top seeds in that one. So let's hear from the Otago captain and her thoughts after that game.
North Harbour versus Otago in the Farrah Palmer Cup with Tegan Lee, captain of Otago. Another win, that's 5 from 5. You must be very happy with how the team's going this week.
Yeah, definitely. Just progressed every single game. Obviously, had 2 big losses last week, but the girls coming in have just really stepped up and just kept it there to get another win, which is awesome.
And what's been different this season that you think that's brought the team together, that's got these results? I mean, today with 38 points, that's your fewest points in a game, which is nuts.
We've had a real focus on our culture and team and like playing for where we're from. We've got a girl from Corral, some from Invercargill, we're just connecting and playing for our province and just really supporting each other and being a team, not individuals, and I think that's really helped us.
And that's the big thing, is that with Southland not having a team, your players are spread over a very big area, having to come together for this.
Yeah, definitely. 2 girls travel 5-hour round trip to training, so the commitment that they show is just unreal. So yeah, you just put your hats off to them and just play for each other. And yeah, if they're willing to travel like that, then we play hard for them.
And obviously today, playing with the wind at your back in that first half, initially it took a while to get going, but 2 tries just before half-time really sort of put you girls in the good commanding position.
Yeah, the heat up here, we weren't really used to it, so took ourselves to get that second wind. They put us in pressure, hats off to them. We're flustered, we're just silly passes and whatnot, so we just needed to come together, group, deep breath, and just try to get back to our structure, because that's how we win.
Well, she says it's hot up here. I'm in long sleeve thermals, so I'm not sure what it's like down there. But there we go. oh dear, I've lost my.
Now I hope that's playing for you. It's stopped for me, unfortunately. Stephen, is it still playing?
No.
Oh, well, I'll remove. All right. So I went on then to talk to her about the fact it's a big week, big year for women's rugby, and if she's seen any difference about that and how it helped things set up. I'll be honest, I've got no idea what those 2 losses were that she was talking about, because Otago beat Tasman 39-7 the weekend prior. So I'm not quite sure what she was talking about there. But yeah, fantastic season that Otago are having in that championship. Hopefully the tech will work, as I do have the co-captain and goal kicker from Harbour to have a chat. We talk about in this one about also about the fact that she's got a job. She used to play for Tasman, but now she is playing for Harbour, and obviously not moving because of money in the game, but because of her job that she has, her day job that she has in that one.
After Harbour versus Otago in the Farrell Palmer Cup with Hayley Atana, the captain of the of Harbour. It's been a tough old season for you guys. It was kicked off with a win and then a few tough games. But growing well towards finals, you think? Or improving through the season?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, had a good start there. Had a bit of a mixed bag in the last couple of games. But we're looking forward to building throughout the season. And I think so far we've shown that. We've shown, good signs of improvement and, promising performances.
A tough first half playing into the wind. But in that second half in particular, your pack really came up strong in a scrum time. And also your bench came on, scored a couple of tries. So happy with the extended squad as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Real proud of the way the girls came on in the second half there. Really lifted the energy and brought a lot of impact. So we'll look to take that into our next game and hopefully start that way from the get-go.
And interesting seeing you using drop goals for your conversions. Is that from your sevens background?
Not particularly. I think the ball fell off the tee there, so I had no option really. But to give it a whirl and in that second one, just looking to get back quick and reset.
Oh, I see you from that one. And look, you've travelled up here. You used to play for Tasman. Obviously, not a professional thing. So, is that through work and through that you've had to move, or was what's brought you up here to Auckland?
Absolutely. So I'm with the Air Force, and work took me down to Tasman. So played with the Tasman girls for a couple of years there, and then obviously got posted up here for work as well. So thought I'd come and try my.
Thought she'd come and try her hand, but then I pointed out that she was Defence Sports Person of the Year a couple of years ago. So trying her hand, I think, is being a little bit self-deprecating there. I think she's a very good sportswoman. The fact that she just came to try her hand. I think she's very good. Usually part of the Black Ferns Sevens setup as well there with that one. I had another interview with... it's gone blank and forgotten her name now. From Otago. It was a Blazer game. If you want to catch that, go and have a look on the New Zealand Sports New Zealand Sport Radio Facebook page with that interview with her. She's also part of the New Zealand Defence Force, a member of the infantry. Seems that the Defence Force have got it. Quite a lot of the players, a lot of the women players in the Farrell Palmer Cup team.
Oh, very much so. And, if you probably look over the years, not just with female, but male as well, so many good sports people have actually come through the Air Force. Of course, the most famous having come through the New Zealand Navy, of course, one Buck Shelford, who captained the All Blacks on 12 or 14 occasions during his career. And of course, one of the true legends of the game.
A photo that I forgot to move over to my computer, but I'll just quickly try and show it over the webcam. There we have a hibiscus plant it's North Harbour Hibiscus is the name of the is their squad, and that is their squad mascot that gets taken to the side of the game, and they use the attributes of the hibiscus plant being a very hardy plant, etc. All as part of their culture that they put within the team, which is fantastic. So. We have a little hibiscus plant in a plant pot that comes and sits by the side of the game, side of the pitch, as their mascot, which I think was a lovely little touch on that one. Run through the rest of the so that what that means now is with Tasman versus Hawke's Bay being cancelled due to the bad weather down in Tasman, so everyone is safe down there, they will. Sometimes I wondered what hibiscus was. It's the flower that's on the, especially that's the logo of the North Harbour shield. There, part of their logo, and also Hibiscus Coast is the coast just north of Auckland. There, where those plants are from. So Tasman versus Hawke's Bay, unfortunately, had to be cancelled due to the rain. It's everyone's safe down there, that means that Tasman will be taking on. We'll be hosting Harbour, assuming they can. They've got the pitch as part of the quarterfinals. So she's going to head back down there to take on her old team. Other games in the championship, also included Taranaki losing to Northland 15-29. As we said, Northland hosting the quarterfinal against Taranaki. So it's a return fixture of that is the quarterfinal this coming weekend as well.
Paul, I was going to say, that particular game, a real game of two halves, you've got to say, with the conditions helping the Fuel in the first half, leading by 15 points to 5, but a strong second half from the Northland Kauri forwards, got themselves back into position and then slowly chipped away. It took them probably a good sort of 74 minutes before they pretty much wrapped up the game. It looked like a try in the 74th minute that was scored, and even on try, but I haven't got the score yet. That just shows you how tough the conditions were. Even they weren't able to pick out the player who got that particular try, and then they scored a late try again, which blew the score way up. But a good performance from the Kauri, given that they didn't have the inspirational Crystal Murray on deck, and they were also missing a couple of other players as well. Laura Cooper, the fullback as well. So good victory for the Taniwha.
Absolutely. Kauri. Moving on Kauri. to the Premiership side, then Wellington Pride beat the Bay of Plenty Volcanics, 32-13. Canterbury continued their winning ways with a 36-19 win over Manawatu Cyclones, who are unfortunately looking like they're heading for the drop from the Premiership. And the final game saw Waikato beat Auckland 41-5, a big statement there, game there by Waikato. In the table then, that means that Canterbury with 5-5, top of the table with one round to go in the regular season, ahead of Waikato. And then there's a bit of a gap, 6-point gap back then to Auckland Storm, then Wellington Counties, Bay of Plenty, and in last place with just one win, Manawatu Cyclones there. With Manawatu having played all of their games now on 7 points, that means that they will—they are for the drop. And Otago Spirit and Hawke's Bay held weekend off before they join the semi-finals of the championship. You'd expect one of those two to go through and get promotion on that side of things. Any other thoughts before we move on to the NPC?
No, but I suppose that Auckland... Auckland Storm Waikato result, the scoreline surprised me a little bit, but I suppose what that tells me at the end of the day, even with their Black Ferns away and also Auckland with their Black Ferns away, Waikato have more depth.
Yeah, and Waikato remember being the champions from last year as well. So it looks like we could have a repeat of the final from last year, which was Canterbury versus Waikato yet again. On to the NPC then. Then we had that midweek game, Otago versus Hawke's Bay. Hawke's Bay coming off the back of their Shield Challenge win there to... I've gone blank. Who they beat the previous weekend. That's bad of me, isn't it? Against Counties. They come off the back of that to lose to Otago. Not a big surprise. That's honest. The team that has the Shield quite often does well in home games and then struggles a bit in some of their away games as they have so much effort into that one. Then on Friday night, as I say, Counties Manukau lost to Waikato 20-34. So, which sounds like a big difference, but the reality was that both sides really struggled with their lineouts. It was a nightmare night for the lineouts, and unfortunately for Counties, one of those went over the top, was picked off by the by Waikato, went inside to the scrum half, who went over and scored. And from there on, it was very difficult for them playing into the wind. And Waikato went away to win it. But it did come. It was, whilst it seems like a bit of a gap, it really was a game of moments. And that was one of the moments in it. And having said that, let's hear from the head coach, Rion, of Counties, from after that game.
After Counties versus Waikato in the NPC with Rion, the head coach of Counties. Look, yeah, it's, to me that game was a tight game until you lost that line out in your own half. they break from. But it was a nip and tuck game to me, and I don't think the scoreline really reflected the sort of how the game was going.
Yeah, just a couple of crucial errors in the end that cost us. Just got to get better at the little details there. Boys showed plenty of fight, but just some details we've got to try to get better at.
This comes off the back of two sort of one-point games, one which went for you, one against you. Considering you guys were a championship side before this, is that good signs of progress that you guys are competing with the big boys?
Yeah, I think so. We're pushing teams, which is good. We've just got to turn them into wins, which would be great. But the boys are working hard for each other, so we'll just try and take something out of this week and move on to the next one against Bay of Plenty.
How hard has it been with having had that disruption sort of where you didn't really have a season last season, sort of preparing the team, getting the guys to know each other, building all that connectivity in the side?
It's actually happened really quickly. Boys have been great. We've worked a lot on the connections and they've come through and done a really good job and it's going well.
Yeah, it is. And then you had three All Blacks coming into the side this week. I guess another disruption for the team, but quality players coming in. So is that a bit of a juggling act for yourself to have to do?
Yeah, it wasn't really. They fit in really well with the boys. The boys all know them and they're great guys and they just slot in really seamlessly. Really good to have them pushing, and we had a couple of niggles which we were able to rest as well, so the timing was quite good.
And it's a bit of a sprint with just, you're already a third of the way through the regular season after three games. So have you, I guess...
Yeah, there was me... that was me asking them basically what were his plans for the season, and he said, look, finals rugby is where they expect to be. But I think it's a bit of a good ambitious goal for counties. I mean, come off, let's say, being a championship previously, now with both the championship and premiership all merged into one, the championship sides making finals is a good progress for them, and to expect more would be a little bit over ambitious, I think.
Paul, I agree. There's been some real improvement in this County's Manukau team. And if you think back to your game, this is dead right. Little movements. We saw that line out that was thrown over the top. You know, that was picked off by the replacement prop for Waikato, who had just, I think it's Ollie Norris. He picked that one up and, you know, hard to stop from close range. But I thought one of the other differences as well, I thought Waikato got a lot of value off their bench. In that second half, and they just for me just appeared to be a little bit stronger in that area, and their set piece was just that little bit better than Counties Manukau. Although to be fair, Counties Manukau with Nepo Lalala did dominate, but I must admit I was very impressed with Rob Cobb, who was propping against Nepo Lalala. I thought they had quite a good battle in the main. Unfortunately, I don't think Counties could keep that consistency throughout the game. In terms of the All Blacks that came in, I thought probably Hoskins Satutu was the better of the three players that were inserted into the Counties Manukau team. And boy, I've got to say, what a good acquisition Damien McKenzie is proving to be for this Waikato team. They'll be hoping that he isn't named in the All Blacks and they can use him for the whole season.
Well, he hasn't been so far, and we'll talk about that later. Knox Nocturnal Right says, yeah, Hoskins Satutu at last, getting a game, had a cracking one. Funny that, so you mentioned Ollie Norris, because I had a chat with him after the game and about his try. So if you want to hear that, folks, head over to our New Zealand Sports Facebook page where you can hear me chatting with Ollie Norris on that one. We're not including all of the interviews in this tonight, but good win there for Waikato in what I think say was a nip and tuck game, was not as easy as the scoreline might suggest. Then we went into what basically upset Saturday, I think is probably the best way of putting it. Taranaki 16, Canterbury 10. Now Canterbury had been sailing up until this point, and it's kind of like, oh look, they're back, they're challenging, they're going to cruise through the regular season. And whereas Taranaki, who had a fantastic season last year going unbeaten, came off the back of two losses coming into this one. So did not see this one coming at all, Stephen. Oh, he's muted himself. Oh, dear. Yes, has it once per show.
Yep, there's one per show. He just with this result, I think it surprised many of us, to be brutally honest. Canterbury had been travelling so well, and they were so impressive the week before against Wellington. And of course, Taranaki's form has been down from the start of the season. So, fantastic performance. And when you consider Canterbury didn't score until the, I think it was about the 70th minute, you know, it really was a case of getting out to a lead while you've got the wind. And of course, those two penalties after half time by Stephen Perifetta, who had a pretty amazing game. And boy, must be knocking on the door for an opportunity in the All Black team, Paul.
Yep. Absolutely, especially with the number of kind of knocks that Bowden Barrett's taking. You got to say at some point he's going to need to be rested, I would say. So, yeah, definitely with a shout of getting a chance in the next four games, you'd think. And also, they went back to Pukekura Park for that one. Good seeing the grass banks full of people yet again. As Nocturne Wright says, good game for Soakula. That one, and Grace was okay but not dominant, and that's going to be a lot of people calling for Cullen Grace to be in the All Blacks, but maybe what we've seen is that he plays very good with a very good pack, and look, he is a very good player, but is he a greater or an international player? Have to wait and see when he gets his opportunity, I guess. That followed up then by Wellington 6, Northland 15. Again, another one we didn't see coming. This Wellington team, clearly, I got to say, is not performing up to the sum of its parts at the moment with that one. So another one there. And Northland, your team, as you've got their cap on as well, Stephen, and a Northland jersey.
Wearing the but listen, it's Happy Milk Plant Day, so I thought I'd wear something with a tree on top, Paul. So there you go.
Happy what day?
Happy Milk Plant Day. It's actually a thing. I know.
There we go.
I actually got sent a message today. Crazy, but talking about crazy, yeah. Once again, a crazy old result. You know, you look through this Wellington team, and boy, there's a lot of talent. There's some All Blacks in there, there's some ex-All Blacks, and a lot of Super Rugby talent. And, you know, even the front row, if you look at Xavier Numea, Pete Cowan, and Amua, listen, they've all played a lot of Super Rugby, but they came up against a really determined Northland side that's ticking a real big box in one particular area. We've seen 240 minutes of rugby from the Taniwha and only two tries actually scored against them, which is pretty incredible. If somebody had told me at the top of the season that they'd be two out of three and they'd only conceded two tries in the season after three games, I'd swear I'd be looking at you sideways. But the reality is that's one area where they've been really good, and they just got ahead at halftime with a bit of a breeze behind them, and basically just shut Wellington out with some really, really good defense. Nocturne Wright has asked me what's happening with Northland. I think there's been a real mindset change within the union. They've built a high performance center, which is pretty amazing. Paul and I got to visit that. I think it might have been last year at some stage. We actually stopped in and had a look around, and it's a very impressive facility, and it's for a lot of the Northland players. They almost call it their second home, and a lot of the players actually get in there. They've got a new trainer involved, and there just seems to be a new attitude in the union. Of course, bringing Marty Veal in, the former North Harbour player who was basically one of the coaching staff of the MLR side, New York, which took out that particular competition this year, has been a huge gain for the Taniwha. Very, very hard man from what I am led to believe. And it's not a bad squad. They've got a lot of depth in their tight five, especially. On Saturday, they played probably their third and fourth ranked locks, Alan Craig and Liam Halameen, with the greatest respect to those guys, you know. But when you haven't got Sam Caird there, Josh Goodhue off the bench, Tom Robinson didn't start, you know, all of a sudden they've got a little bit of depth, and Yeah, they. I still think their attack needs a little bit of work, but it was a was a haggery old day at Jerry Collins Stadium, Paul. So we weren't going to see a lot of running rugby, but fortunately we did. The one good piece of play we saw, a nice touch there from Jack Goodhue with a flip on, found Morby, and he had too much pace for the cover defence, unfortunately for Jack Goodhue. I did speak to Jack after the Waikato game, and that leg was still strapped. No, he isn't gone for the season. It's just a minor op. So he's just going in to get it tidied up. And from what I've been told, he will be available for the end of season tour. In fact, he may even be available for some in North and end season games if they need to get him a little bit of game time.
That's good news. I mean, Rehana and Morby there, they've got a couple of young guys who are just starting their Super Rugby careers as well. So and getting starting action here, which is fantastic for them to see. Rehana used to be a Waikato player. Now, clearly, with players like David McKenzie coming back in, good for him to move to another province and get a starting role, which is one of the things that that perhaps Northland has needed is a decent 10 to run the show. So getting players like him and Morby in there, I think a good addition. And as you say, with players like Milo Harris and Hawkins now, and Josh Goodhue coming off the bench, they've got a bit of depth as well, which is good to see. Whereas previously, you'd look at the bench and go, okay.
very much so. They've got a home game against Southland next Sunday, which is it's a potential banana skin, the Stags, and we'll get to them shortly, are playing some good footy, and, they could be due. You never know.
I was going to say, I'm not sure if banana skin is saying it's one of the kind of bottom of the table kind of clashes in the championship has been historically. I think they're two very well matched sides, both of which are on the up at the moment, which is great to see. And we finished that one off then with Harbour beating Tasman 35-27. So three upsets on the bounce, even though Tasman haven't been tracking that great. But Ring Gatlin sort of puts me in my place as part of this interview. So have a listen to what he had to say after their win over Tasman.
After North Harbour versus Tasman with Bryn Gatlin. And look, I mean, Tasman, always a tough team to play, but you did a great job today just sort of keeping that scoreboard ticking over and punishing their discipline.
Yeah, I think a team like Tasman are a championship team for a reason, so you got to keep applying that scoreboard pressure, stay in the fight. The momentum's not always going to be with you, and that's what happened tonight. We got a good lead, they came back, took the lead, and we just stayed in it, and showed how much it means at home for us to get a win tonight.
And two tries to their four. Any concerns there that both your tries came when they were down to 14 men? You had a bit of difficulty sort of breaking down a 50 man defence, you think?
No, I think they're a championship team for a reason. Like I said, you got to build score point pressure. And, if we didn't take those 3 points, went down there, we may have scored tries. But, Captain Hindsight's a great thing. And obviously tonight we got the win. So, definitely no complaints from my end.
Yeah, no, always a great believer in keeping that scoreboard ticking over.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And so, are you finding that with some of the minor Pacifica boys in there, you've got a few more guys who've got super rugby experience? Is that helping with the level of the rugby that you guys are able to put out this season?
Yeah, of course. We've got a great balance of a group. We've got some young guys that are local guys that have just played club rugby and earned their way into this team from playing really good club rugby. And they're putting their hand up, and then obviously some guys getting some experience at Moana Pacifica, and they showed that they had some real good improvements this year as well. And I think definitely in the physical side of things as well, they're bringing the physical side of the game, and that's what you need sometimes in this area of the competition, is just physicality.
Yeah, absolutely, especially on a cold night like this one. It's good to have that get out of jail thing. Well, fantastic kick-out performance in particular from yourself tonight to keep you guys ahead, and congratulations and good luck for the season. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Nice to meet you.
Cheers. Cheers.
Nice to meet you. I'm sure that's not the first time I've interviewed Bryn Gatton. Deary me, how dare he forget me? I don't know. Never mind. and Stephen's on mute again. Oh dear. So yeah, so there we go. Longstar says, I'm actually enjoying the penalty kicks being taken, a turnaround of my attitude from years ago. Yeah, look, I guess my point wasn't so much around penalty kicks, whether they should have gone to the corner or not, but more the fact that they kept getting forced into taking penalty kicks on that one, rather than being able to break down and get the points. It's, when you're doing a three-question interview, it's a bit hard to clarify your questions like that. But hey, it's good to chat. It's good to him to give me a couple of minutes at the end of the game there with that one.
Paul, I was going to say, they just seem to have a key that seems to know how to unlock Tasman, because it's not the first time that they've actually beaten Tasman. I can recall they may have beaten them over at Harbour Stadium a couple of years ago as well, and when Tasman were actually travelling really, really well, and they upset them with a very convincing win. But I can also remember performances where they've gone down to the Tasman area and gone very, very close. So they just seem to have a set of keys that they know how to open certain doors, so it might be a template for a lot of other sides. But got to say, there were some really impressive performances, and probably none more than the number seven, Melvin, in his first year of NPC rugby. I thought he was very impressive, of course, along with Gatland as well. And Tavita Lee, if you ever needed a winger who's got pace and power, all the skills, Tavita Lee's your man.
Absolutely. Moving on, and I've got a couple of interviews around that Moana Pacifica thing, but we'll cover those off at the end of our NPC roundup. Auckland then lost to Bay of Plenty at Eden Park, 17-21. A few question marks around Bay of Plenty. Last year, after Clayton Millen moved on, they got themselves in some, I'm guessing, expensive head coaches who had Super Rugby experience. This, they've moved on very quickly after not having a great year last year. They've got Dwayne Sweeney in his first year as a head coach. He's got a little bit of coaching experience, but he's a young head coach and going well with Bay of Plenty. So good win for them. Southland then and one of the things we talked about them having a good performance and moving in the right direction, pushed Otago all the way 32-37 down there. Otago, clearly the big brothers in that one, have got a pretty decent squad on paper. Good performance by the Stags, Steve.
Oh, yeah, superb. But listen, just before we do, it'd be remiss of us not to mention that Bay of Plenty win, because I actually thought it was a very impressive win. And, you know, defence in the first half really, really and truthfully kept them in the game. I mean to say, I don't think the Auckland coaching staff would have been overly pleased to know that they're only 10-8 up at half time, and it just so happened it was the Bay of Plenty team that came out in the second half and a fantastic try to Nigel Arwong off a line out set piece, moving the ball wide. And I think from the time that they scored that try in the 56th minute, I don't think they ever looked back. But for me, the real differences in this two team was the performance of the starting halves, Doobie and Trask for Bay of Plenty. I thought they well and truly overshadowed their Funaki and also Harry Plummer. And I just think it was that area where Auckland didn't really drive the game. And of course, their line out fell to pieces in the second half. And at the end of the day, I actually think that final 21-17 score actually flattered Auckland, Paul. But for me, that was probably close to the performance of the weekend. Looking over Bay of Plenty.
Plummer also picking up the yellow card as well. Not a Look, when you're the pivot, you're trying to run the game, getting yourself tripping a player, not a clever move at all in that one.
But I was going to say I had two screens running at the same time, so I was keeping an eye on that on the Southland Otago game, and there were times I was wondering if I'd probably should turn one of those screens off and watch the Otago Southland game, because that just looked like a great game with some fantastic tries. But as you said previously, at the county's Manukau Waikato game, you know, it comes back to the end of the day to little moments, and there were probably little moments in this game that Southland will absolutely regret. But boy, one thing's for sure, they're capable of scoring tries, but I suppose the concern for Dale McLeod is they're leaking just as many points as well. But you can truly say that in all three games, despite the losses, they've actually been in the contest. Good game, but listen, credit to Otago. It's the back of a storm week for them. Remembering they picked up a win against Hawke's Bay during the week, and last Saturday against Tasman. So that's a pretty successful week, you've got to say.
Yeah, absolutely, for them. And that's now sees them sat top of the odds conference with three wins and one loss, with 14 points. With the two wins, a draw and a loss, Hawke's Bay also on 14 points there at the in second place there. Hawke's Bay seeing off Manawatu at 17-43. Yeah, Manawatu, I'm not sure much to say about that one. Manawatu are having a bit of a shocker this season, and have not been helped by having a storm week with top sides in the threat to kick themselves off. And they're four games in already, nearly halfway through their season. And it's not been fair on a province that with one of the fewest resources around as well.
Yeah, exactly. There was a good article in written and stuff. I may actually put that one up just for people to have a look at, and it's written by a local journalist, of course. Ex-All Black assistant coach John Plumtree has actually joined the Turbos, and you can actually see the improvement in their forward performance. But I've got to say, that didn't get a lot of love from referee Ben O'Keefe. For me, there were two tries there that personally shouldn't have been given. There was a second try scored by Brad Webber. To me, there was a clear knock on. Not too sure what the TMO was watching at that time. And right at the end, we saw a player taken in the air, and once again, nothing done about it. So I'm really, really confused. But there were a few things I saw over the weekend. I did see a big shot in the I think it might have been the it might have been the Pride yep. in the Volcanic side, which a player was basically taken out in a heavy hit, no arms, and the commentators were actually celebrating the hit, where basically the TMO should have been addressing the hit and it should have been a red card. So I suppose that's my only disappointment. We've seen some great FPC rugby, we've seen some great NPC rugby, but I still think the officials are missing a bit, Paul.
Yep, no, agreed. Simon says, should Manawatu and Hawke's Bay bring back the Central Vikings? No, Paul Bluntly. They're too far apart to me. Location-wise, I think it would be a bad idea to do that. Just throwing the table up onto the screen there. There's an odds conference, evens conference. Boy, let's put together a system that's clear and obvious to the casual fan as to who's in which group. Not. So there we go. I'm not a fan of this structure, but as you can see, Otago and Hawke's Bay at the top of the odds. On the even side, Auckland and Canterbury still lead the way there. But North Harbour starting to nip at their heels, which is good sign for one of the smaller provinces to be up towards the top end of things.
It's quite interesting, Paul. I looked at the odds at the beginning of the season, and there's not a lot of change. I mean, so the only team that's gone from about $501 to $81 is the Northland Taniwha, and that's obviously if you're showing a bit of early season form, your odds are gonna change. But there's, for me, there's still a few odd ones in there. Wellington, I think at the moment are paying $8. And, you know, you've got the likes of Harbour and Bay of Plenty who are all sitting behind them. You know, Bay of Plenty, I think, is sitting on about $10. I'll tell you what, they'd be a nice little smoky because I think once you find all the All Blacks go back into camp, and it just appears to me Bay of Plenty have also got a little bit of depth as well and a lot of young guys. So I don't think they're going to get too disrupted, but man, in a competition where you've got a very good Canterbury team, you know, I wouldn't even write Tasman off at this stage. So, you know, for me, it's really exciting. You probably say the only team that's possibly looking out of the hunt for a top eight is Manawatu Turbos at this stage. But, you know, as previously spoken about, we know the issues as a union they're having.
Yep. AK asks, Stephen, you mentioned that, so you're really impressed by two young halfbacks in the NPC. Who were the two that you're referring to? That was during the BOP game. So that would be Caleb Trask, and who was the halfback? Who was the scrum half for them? That was Adobe. So yeah, impressed by their performance as a group, not necessarily across all of the NPC, but in that particular game, you thought they had a good game. Those two.
Also, I was also impressed with the. Yeah, there's been a couple of good halfbacks running around, but one that's caught my eye is actually the Southland halfback. I think his second name is Wallace. He kind of reminds me of a young Aaron Smith, and I was also impressed with Dobie, who, you know, you've got to be a reasonable halfback to keep Triple T out of the starting lineup for the Bay of Plenty. But, you know, a couple of other halfbacks who I thought played pretty well over the weekend. Jamie Booth, who went, you know, ironically from the Turbos, is looking pretty good. Roygaard was the other halfback I was actually thinking of from Counties Manukau. He's basically started the season on fire. Might have taken a little bit of a knock though, Paul. You were at that game.
Look, I know. Yeah, I think he's been playing well. And look, he's for a halfback, he's a big boy as well, which is one of those things. That game, I was impressed by Hotham, the Tasman halfback, who has got a contract with the Crusaders next year. So look out for him as well. He was given a license to nip around, and whenever he saw a gap, to go for it. And boy, oh boy, he did, and picked up a try himself as well. So yeah, there's a we are in a golden, or we're entering, it feels like a golden age of halfbacks. We've also got the Waikato boys I've gone blank. The two of them playing for the Chiefs.
Xavier Rowe and also Cortez Ratima as well. Boy, you did right. A lot of good halfbacks around, and I'm pretty sure that all these five super franchises, including Moana Pacifica, will probably be scouting around at this time just to see what's out there. And, you know, you've got some guys like, you know, somebody who's come back from a lot of injuries is Lisati Milo Harris, who's been coming off the bench for Northland and has looked really, really good this year as well. So it's just really, really good to see. So plenty of talent for these super franchise coaches to get their teeth into at the end of the year.
Now, before we move on to talk about international rugby, one of the things that I've been doing has been obviously following Moana Pacifica. I think a lot of us have been interested with them this year. I made all of their games, all their home games, sorry, bar one this year. I thought since I was going to be at a game with a couple of their players who were playing NPC, that I would ask them some questions about how playing for Moana has helped them come into the NPC season. So first up, and I've just realised I haven't got his name up, which is very bad of me. And he told me to call him Easy. So for those of you who will sort of complain about me not pronouncing or using his proper name, I did ask him how he wants to be referred to. And Ezekiel Lindemuth asked him to call him Easy. So I did. Have a listen to him after. It was his, not only that, it was his blazer game for Counties as well. As we'll talk about that before we talk about his being part of Moana Pacifica.
After Counties versus Waikato, that finished 20-32, but it wasn't much closer than that, wasn't it, tonight? To me, it all just came down to one line out, and which they broke away and scored from. By the way, this was neck and neck until that sort of last 10 minutes.
Yeah, I think we just missed out on key moments. yeah, as you said, it was just off our mistakes. Pretty soft tries, if you ask me. But, yeah, it was neck and neck the whole way through.
But tonight was a bit of a special night because it was your blazer night tonight. So congratulations, sir, on getting your blazer. What does that kind of mean to you to get that recognition from the province?
Oh, it's massive. I mean, like, I never in my life would I have thought I'd been playing rugby professionally, and here I am getting my blazer for counties and for an awesome union. And they've welcomed me in with open arms, and I can't be more grateful, really.
And also, you've been able to sort of play around here because with Moana Pacifica during the Super Rugby season. What's it like to be able to be how much easier is that just to come into one of these seasons when you've been in one place rather than sort of being injury replacement, going out to the Chiefs? And does it make your life easier as a professional to be able to focus purely on rugby like that?
Oh, so much easier. All I got to think about is rugby. Think about rugby and I'm going to get put foot on the table at the moment. So so much easier. Yeah, so much easier.
And I think, folks, that's one thing to remember is that, as he says there, put food on the table. If you're not playing, if you haven't got a contract, then it can get very difficult. But look, this is starting to be a very tight season for you guys.
Yeah.
2 1-point games, and I say this one also tight. I guess to me, that's a big step up for you guys because you were a championship before this. It's now all mixed in.
Yeah.
It's actually, I think counties are actually progressing in the right
100%.
Way.
Oh, we're definitely looking to go the right way. And I mean, it shows in the scoreboards. It shows how we're playing. We're 80-minute team now, and it's just we're building real nicely. And I hope the people can see that. I hope that we can fill up the bank sometime. And yeah,
it'll be great to fill up the bank. But folks, look, as you can see on the pitch here, we have got a good crowd.
Good crowd.
Easy has been getting signatures and stuff. So he's a bit of a superstar around here. Oh. So thank you so much for your time.
No, thank
and
you.
Good luck for the rest of the season.
Appreciate that. Thank
Cheers.
You. Cheers.
And perhaps we didn't go into it in depth. These are all very quick and do these after games. But there's just that comment of being able to put food on the table is just nuts when you think about it. The fact that he doesn't have to worry about, what kind of job can I do that allows me to play club rugby and train properly, ready for an NPC season, and gives me all the time off. I can just concentrate on what I'm doing and not have to worry about food on the table for my family. I don't know if he's still single or if he's got a family or not, but either way, those sort of things are things we just don't think about as rugby fans when we're considering these guys making their choices. The fact that he can just concentrate his rugby, not have to worry about food on the table is fantastic, and we're starting to see that through his performances, Stephen.
Yeah, oh, very much so. And didn't he come across well? Just came across as a very humble young man, and just called it as he saw it. And listen, I just like that. During the interview, he was listening very carefully and thinking about his answers, and obviously very thankful to that county's Manukau Rugby Union for taking him in. We all know originally out of the pretty much out of the Auckland province, but we know that sometimes there's a lot of good players that miss the boat in this particular province, in the 09, as you call it, Paul. So just one of those things. Onwards and upwards. And I thought he had a fair game on Friday night as well.
Yeah, and another one of his Moana Pacifica teammates. So Finn and Issy. Here is after the North Harbour game. Sorry, not
here we are after Harbour versus Tasman in the NPC with Finn Issy. Tough game out there today, really tight. You were sort of pushed, but you managed to keep your necks in front. Some of Bryn Gatlin's kicking was fantastic tonight.
Yeah, it was looking to Tasman, they're always going to be a tough team. We all know them that as a championship team, so we always knew they're going to bring the grit and the physicality, and we just tried to stay composed and just gutsy win. So just
hats off to the boys.
Yeah, and what I really wanted to chat to you about, had your season with Moana Pacifica this year, and how's that been different from you coming into NPC off back of Super Rugby rather than club rugby? Have you found it easier so you'd be able to concentrate on your rugby more?
Yeah, I guess there's different intensities. Still the same kind of same game. It's rugby at the end of the day, but just having different systems, different teams, and just trying to adjust to the different environments that we have in Super, and trying to come here. And it's just, I guess in NPC it's good to have a few of the club boys coming through, like from more the junior levels coming through, so just good to mix and mingle with those kind of boys, yeah.
Have you found it better from the strength and conditioning? Did you find it easier coming in this year, having had that extra work?
Yeah, so last couple of years, without super. It's been a bit tough pre-seasons and stuff, but after a year coming off of super, it's just been real easy to adapt, especially with strength and conditioning from super. It's a whole nother level, and you just come here and it's just kind of just a same kind of standard.
All of a sudden you finally got one more time and space.
Yeah,
yeah, that's
true,
man.
It's great to hear that that Marnus doing such a good job and helping you through with this. So thank you for your time and good for the rest of the season. Just wanted to check how you're doing.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Cheers, thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Nocturnal Rights, for saying that these are better interviews than Sky and seem more natural. clearly they are more natural. I don't have someone in my ear saying, go, and you're too... Wrap it up. You've got 10 seconds left. 5, 9, 2, 1. It is different to do it on TV, folks, than this. But it is nice being able to say to talk to these guys. Again, a guy there who clearly is still adapting to the life of being a professional rugby player and learning what it's like. I think a player that I think we'll be able to see much more out of as he gets more comfortable, more used to being a player and switching between environments.
I think that's why we're seeing a lot of improvement by the counties, Manukau's, the Northlands, the Southlands to a lesser extent. You're actually seeing a lot of boys that have actually experienced Super Rugby, whether it be through Moana or one of the New Zealand franchises, and boy, they're coming back into this particular competition in really good nick, knowing that they'll have to basically put out good performances during the Bunnings NPC to secure another contract moving forward. And it's great to see it. I think it's probably one of the reasons why we're actually seeing some really, really good rugby at the NPC level.
Yeah, and one of the things that Clayton McMillan also always was when I talked to him a few seasons ago about the growth of or rising up Bay of Plenty through the ranks, was he said, look, if you look at what stat within squads were for made the difference between the successful and non-successful NPC teams with the number of Super Rugby player experiences players they have. And so one of his, and then the next stat he used was, if you get into the New Zealand under-20s, you effectively get you will get a Super Rugby contract. So he spent a lot of work there in Bay of Plenty working on that at the under-20s crowd to get those players good enough and into the New Zealand national under-20 team. So that he had those super, and if you say, if we have six teams rather than five, there are more super players to go around, and therefore the level will rise up. And we're seeing that, which is great to see. So great to chat to those two guys with that Moana in mind. For this coming weekend, I've just realized I've just gone and got rid of the fixture list, which I meant to have up there so I could tell you which games I was going to go to. But on Friday night, I believe I'll be heading over to Waikato for the note, because they're not playing on Friday night. They're playing on Saturday. I'll be heading over on Friday night to Waikato versus Manawatu in the NPC in that one. I think I'll probably stay home on Saturday because we've got those international games. Watch them on the telly, and then on Sunday I will head down to Tauranga for Bay of Plenty versus Counties. So those are the two games that I think I will be making it to this weekend. I could have maybe headed up to Counties for their Farrah Palmer Cup game on Saturday, but with all that international rugby on telly, I think I'll probably stay home to watch those. Yes, we'll need to talk about those next week on the show. Some say yes. Some players going into the Australian franchises to help as well with MTC. Yep, that's those players who come back from Australia, because obviously Australia doesn't have competition at this time for their non-international players. So having them come over here and get some rugby is also a good thing as well. Any final thoughts on NPC before we quickly switch to international?
No, I think we've pretty much covered everything.
So quick looking forward then to international. As has been said in the live chat by LB, the Springboks team will be announced soon. I do like how the Springboks announced their side very, very early in the season. You kind of touched on it before that John Plumtree has gone and helped with Manawa 2. I think one point thing to point out, though, is he's gone there and he's offering his services for free. He's helping out. So now he says he's not full time with them. But the fact that he has gone, that he's lost his, he's been fired And obviously, that's not that's obviously not a, you can easily go into a bad place and just go into a shell. But no, what's he do? He immediately reaches out and tries to help one of his friends who is coaching and having a tough time. So that really shows the character of the guy, and really impressed with the way that John Plumtree has reached out and is working with Manawa too. So hat tip to him. Well done, sir. We wish you all the best in your coaching journey from now on. We've also had the announcement as to the squad that we're meeting up with the All Blacks. So Brody Retallick, Jack Goodhue, Nipo Lualala, Ofa Tuangafasi and Patrick Tupolotu will not be assembling in Christchurch. So those teams will not be travelling. But congratulations to Fletcher Newell and Tyrrell Lomax, who will be the two props going, obviously off the back of some good performances against South Africa. Josh Dixon will be covering in the locking department. I'm not sure he'll actually get any game time, but good for him there. Obviously a young guy. And then Braden Enall back in covering for Jack Goodhue there in the centres. Another player that I think probably be more of a squad player and not necessarily get much game time, unfortunately, but for him. I see him much more as a 13. I can't see Brayden Enall covering at 12. And let's be honest, Rico Iwani has made that jersey his own. However much some of us might question whether he should be in that jersey or in a winger's jersey instead. I think good move there that Newell and Lomax are joining the squad, Stephen, in particular.
Permanently, yeah. I think they did enough in their last test to stay on board. I know there'll probably be a lot of talk about Braden Enall, whether he's up to it or not. But, you know, the reality is they're in there as cover, and there's an opportunity, and we've already seen that with a few lads that have taken their opportunities. And if I kind of look around and at what I'm watching in NPC, I've probably got to say there's probably nobody in the midfield that's really, really stood out. I've seen the odd sort of cameo from maybe somebody like Baylen Sullivan, and there's been the odd really good performance. But for me, I don't know if I've seen enough of a standout performance to warrant a player being elevated to the next level.
The only one I can think of is perhaps Thomas Manger Jensen. Did some good work with in Super, but still a young player coming through. It's a powerful runner. Maybe that's that might be the one there could come through. I also saw Anton Leonard Brown look good in the tunnel at the weekend. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's back soon. Playing some rugby, so maybe he'll be back. And I don't know if he'll be back in time for the Bledisloe Cup games, or whether it's or whether he waits until the Northern Tour. But he looked good, and so someone that I wouldn't be surprised if he comes back. And if this is a short term, as you say, cover by Braden Enall.
One player who has looked pretty good, and I've got to say, playing out of position is, and again in a beaten team yesterday, is AJ Lamb. I think he's looked really quite comfortable in that centre position. But you know, this is once again NPC, and you just want to see a little bit more of the other bits to his game. But he's certainly a stripping lad in that midfield.
Yep. So obviously the All Blacks taking on the Pumas now over the next two weekends. They've obviously beaten the Springboks last time out. We've also got Joe Smith now officially with the team, much more in the team as an attacking coach. Ian Foster took over that role at interim for the South Africa tour or for the South Africa games. But now he's got a replacement in the coach that had that role before that lost his role. But anyway, Joe Smith now in there as well. So it'll be interesting to see how that looks against the Pumas. and the stars were aligned, eh? Finally, so that's that piece. Obviously, the other game then is, unless once the All Blacks will go into those two games as heavy favourites. Whilst LB says the Pumas look good, it's one thing losing to the Pumas for the first time ever over there in Australia. It'll be another thing losing at home in New Zealand to them outside of COVID, which would be that's right. The All Blacks will go into those as strong favourites. Now, the other games that are going on, obviously, at the same time are the Springboks versus the Wallabies, or Wallabies versus Springboks. Now, I think a lot of people would have the Springboks going into this as heavy favourites. But as Boa says, stats don't lie. So an interesting one on the article out of South Africa that I've read, let's be blunt. Since the game went professional in 1996, the Boks have won 4 out of 29 tests against the Wallabies in their part of the world, i.e. in Australia. It's been 9 years since the Boks last won in Australia. That was a 32-12 victory in Brisbane. 9 years, 4 games out of 29. Wow, that is an appalling record for the Springboks in Australia, isn't it, Sue? Banging away at your screen trying to make it work.
Sorry for the delay. It's probably when you use a mouse that's faulty. I've got to say, I'm really surprised by that record. All I want to know, when the Springboks travel to this part of the world, do they travel from the right or do they travel from the left? Maybe they need to go back around across the Pacific. How shall I say, go west as opposed to east? But that is absolutely incredible. I mean I'm absolutely staggered by that. So they obviously struggle coming to this part of the world, especially Australia, which is unusual because, you know, sometimes condition-wise, atmospherically, it can be similar to South Africa. You know, it can get very, very warm. So I'm really surprised with that. It'll be really interesting to see what the South Africans do in terms of, there's a lot of talk coming out of the Republic about playing Malcolm Marks as your starting hooker. And listen, I think he's the best hooker in the world. You've got to start him, as far as I'm concerned. Listen, I think they probably have got a little bit carried away with the bomb squad tactic, but you know what the Boks did show in that test against the All Blacks, boy, they have got some firepower out wide. But it also means if they're going to go to that style of game, they'll probably have to look at more mobility in their pack. If they need to play that open style of game, because I actually truly believe this, that game at Ellis Park, I think their pack just actually ran out of steam because of the style of game that it was at the end of the day.
Yeah, and look, so the Boks win record in Australia is 13%. The same period in New Zealand is 16%. They have a greater success rate in New Zealand than they do in Australia. So there you go. That gives you an idea. So so a lot of people are putting the Boks as strong favourites going into this one, I think. But boy, oh boy, the stats do suggest otherwise. LB has told us that the Boks squad is out. So I'll be honest, I am very quickly trying to Google to find that squad. To see if we can have a very quick chat about what it is. Oxen Dwemba are starting again. Marks is back on the bench. So quickly, the lineup for the Boks as Joseph Dwemba. Franz Malherbe at the front row, Etzebeth and Ludiaga in the engine room, Khaleesi, Peter Steftatoy and Vermeulen are your Lucies, Pfaff and Pollard are going to run the show, Delende and Am in the centres, Mapimpi And Gallant has been moved to the wing with the it's been brought in on the wing, sorry, and Willemse at fullback. The bomb squad, or whatever you want to kind of call them, is Marks, Kitsoff, Koch, Mostert, Smith, which is so five forwards and then three backs. So Hendricks, Elton Yangcheese, and Franz Stein. So the first time that they've got a 5-3 bench in a long time. So a change of tactics by the Springboks, which is interesting on that one. I think that's probably the biggest, whilst most people will look at the fact that Dwemba has been started again, I think that 5-3 bench is perhaps the biggest tactical switch here in this squad.
Oh, very much, and maybe a technical change in the way that they're looking at playing. But it does concern me that have they got the mobility to play that wide open game? No question. The talent is there, but I just wonder, and I just forget the name of the lightweight open side flanker who they normally carry in their squad as well. Sevens player, name escapes me, Paul. I just wondered if he's part of their plans at some stage in the second half. But in terms of Malcolm Marks, you're starting
Quagga Smith. So you're talking about, yeah.
Quagga Smith, yeah. Yep. Yeah, Quagga Smith is the guy I was thinking of. But, you know, to me, you actually play your best hooker every day of the week and twice on Sunday. And if you want to turn a number three hooker into a world-class hooker, you can give them the 20 minutes at the end of a game if you're in control of that game.
Well, there you go. That's Stephen's opinion. I think we had a very quick chat about it last week about how the fact that you could, that I guess if you have the, if you have the weaker player starting, and you can replace him after half an hour, whereas if you play the stronger player and he gets injured after 20 minutes, you then have to end up having 60 minutes of the weaker player. So, look, it swings and roundabouts a bit there, depending on how you use your bench. If you're putting your weaker team against an opposition's stronger team, which they normally will start with, then I guess, yeah, you are making the differential bigger at the beginning of that game as well. So there we go, folks. You've seen the stats. You've heard the team. I'll be honest, we haven't talked about the Wallabies, but good point has been made in the live chat there that they're struggling at 10. We probably should have talked about the fact that a 71-cap veteran who's not played for 3 years is back, and I've gone and forgotten his name.
Bernard Foley.
Thank you. Which means I think he's the second or highest capped player in the squad, which is nuts when you think he doesn't play for several years and be brought back in. So it'll be interesting to see what this Wallabies squad looks like.
I was going to say, on saying that, they did bring Quade Cooper back from out of the wilderness. So yep. it's not the first time we've actually seen this. So who knows how this is going to work out? Yes, he's got experience, but boy, is he going to be up to speed? And I think they've probably had the confidence really knocked out of them. So expect a really big performance from the Wallabies. But if I had to pick a winner, I think the Box will bounce back, and they should bounce back. And if they don't bounce back, I would imagine that it'll be this time next week. It'll be the Springbok coach who will be under a whole lot of pressure to maybe keep his job.
The Rugby Fixation podcast, which is one that's out of Australia, has done put out a fantastic tweet, which looks at the unused options at 10 from the Australian under-20s for the past decade. The number of players that who have gone through there, including one that you're a fan of, definitely at Super Rugby level anyway, is Jack Debrasini, for example, Mac Mason, Hamish Stewart, Baylon Cunsey, there's Dave Horwitz, Jake McIntyre, Luke Burton. There's like 15 to 20 odd names there that have been through the under 20s in that 10 jersey. And between them, only one of them has got a Wallabies cap, and that's Carl Godwin, which just shows you how they're reliant on that older generation.
Yeah, it sounds like a list that the Blues had in and around first fives post Carlos Spencer, when they couldn't find a first five to fill the spot, so they eventually basically went to market and bought in one Bowden Barrett. So, gee whiz, that is a crazy stat.
So I've retweeted it, so you can check it out at Drive Them All on Twitter or search a Rugby Fixation podcast on Twitter, and you can see the number of under-20s. Under-20s Australian players who have not made it to the Wallabies in that 10 jersey. And it is quite shocking as to how many players have missed out between your Foley's, Cooper's, James O'Connor's, and then your Noel Lecia. There's a massive gap between them of players who have ended up in the wilderness from an international point of view. So anyway, we need to wrap things up because we're going for way too long. Thank you, Mr. Harris. It's been a fantastic time having you back on, you on last week. What am I talking about? Jeez.
I was.
Too many beers, too much time on the thing here, too tired. But have a fantastic week, folks. Stay safe. And as I say, I'll be at a couple of games this weekend. So I'll be surprised if we have some stuff from Stephen as well on the what's our Facebook page? I've gone blank. Whatever it is, folks.
New Zealand Sport Radio.
New Zealand Sport Radio. Thank you. God, dear. Because as I say, there is some cool stuff on there. As Stephen said, he's going to put that article on there about how Manawatu have been under such pressure, and it's been unfair on them as well. So Stephen's putting some good stuff out there in particular. And also you're getting our post-match interviews we've both put out there as well. So do check out the Facebook page. And thank you very much. We'll be back next week at 8 p.m.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.